Hour number two of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch. If you have a question or comment for Doc, 865-656-9900. That's 865-656-9900. You can use that number to call the program or text the show, but we'd love to have you join us.
Doc, with men's basketball, as they go forward, what do you think? Obviously shooting better, but what do you think are the keys toward that? I know that when Rick Barnes was asked about, well, how come y'all don't have many assists the other day, he said, well, you can't get assists if you keep missing shots. But what do you think would be the key as far as Tennessee flipping the switch on offense?
Yeah, I think it seemed like we spent a lot of time moving the ball around outside to get an open three-point shot. And it seems like against Texas, there was some penetration. There was better off-ball screens. And it seemed there's so much motion outside to try to get someone off, on a pretty tight man-to-man to get the ball handed off. And by the time you make a penetration, a couple times we took shots with 3 seconds on the shot clock that were 30 feet away. I don't think that's a high percentage shot. You just can't do that. They got some poor shots. I'd say penetrate in the lane. You don't have to necessarily, and if you don't dish it out, try to get a shot off, get fouled, do some of the stuff that Auburn does and Florida does where they penetrate and get fouls, get to the free throw line. But I just think that, and people have scouted Tennessee enough to know that you're going to penetrate and take 2 steps into the lane and then turn and dish it back outside, for a shot. But if you're 12 feet away, you dish it back to someone who's 25 and a half feet away, and they throw it up because they got someone on them, that's still not a high percentage shot. So, I think you got to be able to off-ball screens. You got to get people in the lane. And I think that, you got to utilize some of the bigs inside. You got a talented freshman that is hot and cold, but, get him going and, get I like the rotation inside. Josiah Jordan James, don't worry about him shooting a three. He's deadly with that 15-foot jump shot. Get it to him, and once they start collapsing on him, it's going to open up shots under the basket and in the lane. So, take what they'll give you. If they'll give you the 15-footer with Josiah Jordan James, take it. Don't dish it back out for if Vescovy is not hitting or, Ziegler isn't hitting, then it's okay to keep shooting. I get it. But, you need to intermittently just take your time and with an offensive possession and get a better shot.
Martin Truex wins the Clash at the Coliseum. That's the L.A. Coliseum. That's the 12th time he's been in that, the first time he's won it. He didn't win in 2022. Your thoughts on Truex getting the win there and your thoughts overall on the race?
Well, I think he's coming off a horrific year and been a really tough year for Martin Truex. Martin Truex Jr. didn't make the playoffs last year. A lot of soul searching in the offseason. There were people believed that he was thinking about retiring at the end of last year, decided to come back. And he's one of the nicest guys in the garage. If you had to walk through the garage and take votes about people who would vote for him for mayor of the garage, he probably would get 99% of the votes. That's how well liked he is. So giving, so accommodating, so great to see him win and do well. The race itself is an exhibition race. It isn't a points race. It's geared for, made for television, made for fans. In the L.A. Coliseum, it's out there to try to get NASCAR in front of a lot of people who've never seen a stock car race, and maybe never seen a stock car for that matter. So it's a lot of stop. They had a halftime. They have heat races. They have last chance qualifying races. They have a 150 lap race with 75 lap intervals with a halftime where there's a concert. They had a couple of name artists. They had some Latino artists out there. They had some a couple of really really top notch rappers that performed. Lots of celebrity power from Hollywood. Lots of special guests. During one of the breaks, they had Heisman Trophy winner Caleb Williams met with the USC marching band, and they got to the corner and he grabbed the sword and lit the torch, the Olympic torch. And so there was lots of show, lots of Hollywood show, but to be an exhibition race, and it wasn't. So that part, if you don't mind that break, it was fine. It ran over. The one disappointing part was they kept talking about at the end of the show they're going to have a special ceremony up on the platform, on the medal platform, where they were going to give a gold, bronze, and silver, or gold, silver, and bronze medals to the top three winners in the race. And by the time they got the cars around and did the burnouts and got them up that way, they were already like an hour and a half to 2 hours over time. because they came on the air at 5 o'clock, and it was like 10:40 or whatever when they were finally done. I think they're supposed to be off the air at 9 or something. But anyway, they Mike Joy had to leave before they could do the medal ceremony, which they had been promoting and plugging for days and weeks about how special this ceremony was. They were just getting the medals out of the box, and the celebrities were there, and it just didn't happen. So a lot of fans disgruntled about that. But overall, I think it's the idea is to get NASCAR in front of fans that haven't seen it. And so I think the racing was better this year. Still not really great racing. People say, well, I've never seen a NASCAR race. Well, you probably still haven't because that's not what it's about. But it's okay. Several announcements during the telecast. During the pre-race, they announced that Kevin Harvick had signed with Fox. Mm-hmm. Will be going full-time with Fox in 2024. The best part of the night for me was when they said, well, Kevin, we got some special guest here who wants to comment about you taking the television deal. And it's his wife, Delana, and his daughter, you know, Piper. And Piper stole the show. She says, Daddy, I'm so glad we don't have to worry about you driving a race car anymore. All we have to worry about now is what comes out of your mouth. And that is about as sweet as it gets. And he's just breaking up. But anyway, he's going to be a part of the team with Clint Bowyer, who's hysterical, and Mike Joy. So that'll be a really good broadcast team.
Let's talk to Lynn. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Lynn.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Doc, I think you've already answered one of my questions. My comment on the race yesterday, it was pretty good entertainment, but not much of a car race. They didn't have room to, but... for people who like to watch the chrome bumper, they had their fill of that yesterday.
Yeah, looked like the expressway at L.A. at rush hour. There was lots of pushing and shoving and beating and banging. It's like, you know, you're running them in a quarter mile track like in a parking lot. So what do you expect these high horsepower cars to do?
My comments or what I want you to comment on is a couple of the rule changes that were announced last week. And one of them I really understand, but I don't like it. The other one I don't even understand, but it scares me of what it might be. And that one is the elimination of the stage breaks for the road courses. And that don't bother me so much as long as we're not testing that. That'll lead to something down the road. I'd hate to see the stage breaks eliminated in the regular NASCAR, you know, oval track races. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I have mixed opinion. I think the stage breaks, are a nice little way to reset the field to help the competition, and to be able to get some time to get exposure for the sport and for the sponsors. But it also adds time, and time is when you lose people when you stop racing. It'd be like, you know, it's like some of these networks that run seven commercials at a timeout on a network football game. I mean, you can't help but start, you know, channel surfing. And when you do that, people are going to channel surf. The idea is to keep the action going. It's golf and soccer, they just go from hole to hole showing you different stuff. And in racing, I think that's important because the road racing is so important and is so compelling. I think that they need to eliminate some of that stoppage and staging and also be able to get the race done, get the race in, because the road races themselves can have a lot of caution flags.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I just hate to see it go to the point that they would eliminate the stage breaks at an oval track. I think bunching the field up at least twice during the race is a really good thing for the fans and for competition.
Did you also see, Lynn, where they made major adjustments? They showed they schematically showed how they've adjusted the back of the stock cars to try to eliminate the solid impacts that's creating head injuries and neck problems by allowing some angles on the rear support. So when the car hits, it'll absorb the energy and it'll bend some of the metal, and also allow some of the spring-like effect on how the back section is attached to the center section. And which I didn't realize they were going to do. They might have just done it for L.A., but they're thinking about, I think, doing it for other short tracks where they can go in and adjust the buoyancy of the safer barrier. So they can take some of the support out of the safer barrier so it gives more some of the foam, and they've determined they can take a little bit out here and there depending upon the mile-an-hour volumes, speeds of the cars that are going to hit, and therefore allow the barrier to absorb more of that energy as opposed to being very rigid. I think that's also another way to get at it.
Well, I'm glad you explained that, because I never was very good at geometry or physics, either one, and I think they had a lot of that with that. The other one that that, let's see, now I've, gosh, it's terrible to get old. What the other rule? Oh, yeah, the Ross Chastain rule. You know, my head kind of understands why they've done that. I really do. But, wow, what a move that was, and how much excitement it brought to NASCAR, and then just to turn around and outlaw it.
Yeah.
Kind of bothers me. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think that it could lend itself to some dangerous situations, quite honestly. Depending upon the speed, you're at one of the slowest tracks that NASCAR runs at Martinsville, where the points races are. If you try that at a track where it's a lot faster, that car could catch a part of the wall, and who knows where it could end up. You know, you're wide open, hammer open, and you can, then that car comes off the wall, and you hit somebody or you get hit by somebody. At those speeds, I mean, that looked like a video game as fast as he was going. I realize what they're trying to do. It's more about safety than anything else. And he, you know, he pulled off the ultimate Hail Mary. That'd be like football outlawing Hail Marys, but because the chances are, vast majority of the time they don't work. But boy, they're fun to watch. So I understand what they're trying to do. They're worried about, you know, and not every track has the smoothness and contour enough of the wall. You go up and lay that thing against the wall at Kansas or somewhere like that, who knows how fast you could be going. And that car could climb the wall, and suddenly you're somersaulting like we used to have cars years ago do. So you don't want that.
Yeah, I know. And it's like I said, my head understands why they did it. But, boy, I thought it was a great thing, brought a lot of excitement and all of that. So, anyway, just had mixed feelings, wanted your thoughts on that. So, guys, it's been in some ways a short winter, but in other ways a long winter. So I'm ready to get it on here for a few months.
Well, you're 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks to Daytona, but Lynn, we always appreciate it. Thank you very much. We'll get a break. We've got one more segment with Doc Punch coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Final segment for us with Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville right there in the Suburban Shopping Center, just west of Westtown Mall, right off of Kingston Pike. So, Doc, what do you think about the Wolfpack being back in the top 25 as they jump into the AP at number 22?
Yeah, how about that? I've watched them play a couple of times this year. I've really been pleased with how resilient they are in terms of runs. They take care of the basketball. They have a pretty good outside shot, and their guard play inside it penetrates, and I'm just pleased with how well they played. They hung with North Carolina for a half in Chapel Hill, and there was a sizable discrepancy in free throw shooting in terms of opportunities there, and that's as far as I'll go. I think overall NC State has played well. They beat Wake Forest at Wake, and they dominated Florida State. They beat Virginia Tech recently, so they've played better and better. I think they've got a Virginia game coming up, which is going to always be a slugfest as well. Virginia plays defensively and shoots the ball outside.
What did you think in terms of what we saw with Jim Boeheim? Proud member of the ACC, takes the moment to kind of channel his inner Nick Saban, calls out some specific programs, three in particular, Wake Forest among them, that he says simply, just as Saban had said, well, they're just buying players. He has since walked back those comments, but it is is there any other descriptive right now for Jim Boeheim other than the get off my lawn guy?
No, I think it's just, he doesn't need to go out that way. He's got a legacy for being a top-notch coach and what he's accomplished at Syracuse. And you don't need to tarnish that by making some comments about getting frustrated and angry. The NIL deal is available to anybody and everybody. There are some really unique things coming out that people are using to raise money. Deion Sanders is using it's a phenomenal deal. I heard some people told me about this past weekend. He's using a prescription card company that gives kickbacks and rebates to generate money for the university. He's got the University of Colorado doing it, which I think is a phenomenal idea. It's really I think there it's out there for anybody, but for Boeheim to come up and point the finger, I think that's that's a little beneath him. He needs to maintain his dignity and stay above that.
Doc, the NFL came out last week and said concussions were up 18%. And is that a concern, or is it a direct result of them, quote, redefining what a concussion is?
I don't think concussions are up 18%. I saw that note. I think it's the diagnosis of concussions is up 18%. I think that's a cop-out. The fact that they've been happening, they're probably, that you're finally starting to take the time to take these players off the field and go look somewhere and diagnose them. Tua being the exception for that. He didn't get diagnosed for a few more games, unfortunately. But you're getting these players off the field. When they get hit, they're gone. And you go in and you're taking care because you understand what the long-term impact of a concussion, can be on your quality of life. So I think it's not the concussions themselves; it's the diagnosis that's caused the rising numbers.
And medical observers on the sideline or maybe in the press box have also stopped play when they have seen somebody wobbling, which is something they should be doing.
And they've been hesitant in the past to do that too. And now they're not.
Let's get a call from Chris. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Chris.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. I was going to say, Mr. Punch, I mean, it was really good to watch that race last night. But it was what was really cool about it is they beat those cars half to death. And if we all look back at what the cars were 10 years ago, there'd be like five cars left in that whole field through that class race.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Chris, and that's a good point. All the sheet metal, there'd have been debris everywhere. Every other lap, there'd have been a part of a fender or a quarter panel or a bumper or a grill or something. And now with all the fiber, the fiber products that are on these cars, it buckles and pops right back out. It may get scraped up a little bit, but by and large, the car and the bodywork, hardly gets damaged. It doesn't get torn away, doesn't get ripped. What happens more when you hit with the back of the car is you get a suspension problem, and that's what puts you out of the race. Not a sheet metal issue, because there is no sheet and no metal. It's a fiber piece that goes around that forms the bodywork.
The only question I have, do you think that there'll still be they're going to be more bumping, pushing and shoving on the big straightaways with cars like that, or are they going to limit that still?
I think the cars will be strong enough that you can bump draft and you can bump and you can push to an extent. Now I think you're also going to see some of these cars buckle when they hit on a super speedway, when they back in on a super speedway, and it's going to be done. Compared to what happened in years past, last year rather, where you hit something and a car looked like it hadn't been hit, but the driver himself inside the car in the seat has absorbed all that energy. Suddenly, you got career threatening or career ending injuries associated with all that force going to the driver and to the head.
Right. So, do you think they're safer compared to last year, because you remember Bowman and Kurt Busch was out from concussions.
Yeah, and Kurt still struggling, and I hate it. I've been around Kurt a few times in the offseason, and I feel for him. I saw him at an event for – he spoke one night at an Alan Kowicki function, and he was at the Hall of Fame. I saw him, and I can tell that, you know, he's not where he needs to be. And I hate it for him. I really do, because you could see that that was a – you know, he at his career, at his point in his career – he should be able to go out on his own and, you know, race a limited schedule for a few years and then be done. But I'm not sure that can happen now. Yeah, I think the cars are much safer, or I shouldn't say much. They're safer than they were. Now we're going to see what happens. The true test is what happens on the racetrack when we get to some of the speedways.
Right. I got one more question. How do you think Keselowski is going to turn out with Roush Fenway? I mean, they've struggled bad the past 2 years.
I think they made some progress. I think they were so far behind, you know, and they got behind in so many ways. They were behind the other Ford teams. I think Brad Keselowski realized it wasn't an overnight fix. They had to come in and change people. They had to change. They had to build cars. The new car probably helped them a little bit too, helped close the gap. I think they were better. Their short track program was better last year than it had been. And their plate program, or what we call the super speedways, Daytona, Talladega, I thought they were competitive. The question is going to be, how are they going to be when we get to Atlanta and Charlotte and Texas and places like that? So I think they're making progress. I expect to see that car run in the top 10 at a lot of races, and maybe the top 5 on some of the short tracks, and be a contender to win at Daytona or Talladega.
All right. Well, thank you. I miss getting to hear you call races like years ago on ABC. And maybe one of these days we'll get to hear you do it again.
Well, you're kind, Chris. I appreciate that. That was a lot of fun for a lot of years. I enjoyed it. Whenever I walk by and see an old race on television, to hear my voice, it like brings back a flood of memories and all the great times we had over the years with some incredible announcers. I do want to add one more thing, though. My longtime colleague, Ned Jarrett, his wife Martha passed away this morning, and I would like to pass along my deepest sympathies and condolences. Martha was an incredible lady, the epitome of class and dignity, and she was supportive of Ned all through his years in racing, and of course helped their son Glenn and Dale and their daughter Patty. That's been a great family. Ned was like a second father to me. So I know it's really a tough time for the Jarretts, and I would just encourage you, whether you ever met Martha or not, if you did, she left a lasting impression. She was a wonderful lady, and I sent a note to Dale Jarrett this morning saying, I remember standing beside Martha. Would never watch Dale race. She mm-hmm. would sit in the Busch van in the infield behind pit road, because Ned could park behind pit road there by Victory Lane. And I remember the last lap of the Daytona 500, and I'm doing radio down there, because CBS had television, and I'm standing beside her, and she's looking at me, and she has her hands covering her face and her face buried down so she doesn't want to watch. But she has the radio on listening to our call, and Dale Jarrett comes down and holds off Dale Earnhardt Sr. and wins the Daytona 500 driving for Joe Gibbs. And then she moved her hands away, and her face was flushed, and she had tears pouring down her face as a proud mama. Her son had won the Daytona 500. So I'll never forget the look, and then talking to DJ later, working together with DJ and calling along with his dad, his first win with the Wood Brothers. But what a great lady, and I would hope that those of you who know the Jarrett family will keep them in your prayers.
Sorry to hear of her passing, Doc, but we always appreciate your time. What does the week hold?
I don't think we're headed to Daytona, but we'll keep that in the back pocket. Probably going to head out of town over the weekend for a special anniversary, and hoping we get to do that, and then talk to you guys early next week.
Safe travels, have a great time, and we'll catch up Monday.
We'll do that. Thanks, guys.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Sports Talk continues. Up next, comments from Lady Vols coach Kelly Harper as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. And tonight, Jimmy, it's another Monday night assignment for Lady Vols basketball.
Yeah, they take on Mississippi State. They beat Mississippi State earlier this year by 11 points. And this is where Rekia Jackson transferred from. She was at Mississippi State, actually led the SEC in scoring her last year at State, transferred to Tennessee. Now this is her first appearance back in Starkville. Here are pregame comments from Kelly Harper.
Coach, you back on the road again, obviously, starting with Missouri, then LSU, and now Mississippi State. You're playing a road game against a team that's coming off a week break. I don't know how, sometimes the schedule just lines up that way. Just what are the challenges of going to Mississippi State? And then the second part of that, obviously for Rekia, this could be a highly emotionally charged game. How do you sort of help her?
Yeah, this is actually our third road game in a row where the team had the week to prepare. Missouri did, LSU did, and now Mississippi State. So obviously it's a challenging stretch for us. And, as we go down there, we know that they're going to be fresh, they're going to be rested, high energy. They change up their defenses. They did a really good job of attacking us, getting the ball to the paint, I thought, in our first game. And had a shot, I think, in the third, maybe the fourth quarter to tie the game. Missed it. We scored. Got a stop and scored again, and we're able to pull away. But that was a tight game for a long time, and so we've got to go in and understand it's going to be a challenge. I would imagine it would be emotional for Rekia, first time back. And, I think the important thing for her is to continue to stay locked in on what she's doing, be in the moment, whether that is practice or the game, and utilize her teammates to help her do that.
Kelly, just kind of where the record's at, every game kind of feels like a must-win. You are really capitalizing on the opportunities that you have left. How do you kind of balance that as a coach of, keeping the urgency but also not making that pressure on them?
Yeah, I don't think the players right now are feeling it as pressure. I think they do have a little bit of urgency. They've had really good focus and pretty good mindset going into the games and going into practices. So I think that's where we want to stay. You can't look at it as it's just an opportunity. I mean, that's how you have to look at it. It's an opportunity to go out and play basketball. And, obviously we want to play well. And we feel like if we go out and play well, we've got a good chance to win.
Justine Bissot's been getting in games pretty early. What have you been seeing from her in practice, and where are you pleased with her progress?
Yeah, she's continuing to get better and better, and I think she's more comfortable. We've seen a lot of strides forward for her on both ends of the court, and she can really score the ball. And as all the other things come along, we're just trying to make sure we get minutes for her. I think it's important right now. She's put in work. She's really elevated her game. And that, obviously, we see because it's practice. She's done a better job, so we've got to get her minutes.
Coach, you mentioned after the game on Thursday against Ole Miss how Jordan Walker has just really set the tone in that game specifically, but also this season. Can you kind of elaborate on what her role has been? Because it doesn't always show up as much on the stat sheet, but I know that she's making such a big impact.
Yeah, so let me actually go back and say this is who she is. This is who she has been. She is a competitor. She is consistent. She doesn't back down. She's tough. You know what you're getting with her, and she just finds ways to make plays. And really proud of her. And again, I think, her teammates have so much respect for her and how she plays and how she carries herself. And right now she's just leading the charge and really setting the tone.
You understand momentum, for a team, particularly going, and I can't believe there's only six SEC games left. That's hard to believe we're already here. But then you go into your bye week, obviously, after Monday's game with the bye on Thursday. What do you want to see from your team going into this game and then coming out of this game? Where do you want them to be?
Well, I want to see great mental focus and toughness. And I think if you have those two things and you can figure out your execution, whether that's moving the ball, getting the ball inside, understanding what defenses we're seeing, being tough and stingy on the defensive end. To me, if you're focused and you have that toughness about you, you'll figure those execution pieces out.
It feels like this matchup, I mean, last time obviously you guys had a great night on the offensive glass, and it feels like that's kind of where you guys can create separation here on the boards. What are you kind of looking for with the little things when it comes to rebounding, especially since last game it was a pretty close battle on the boards?
Yeah, I think we have to be mindful of where we're at on the court, our positioning, and some of that's going to be coaching, just putting our players in position that they're ready to get the rebound when the opportunity arises. I think our spacing is going to be important. Our ball movement is going to be important. Our aggressive play on the offensive end is going to be important. All those things lead to good shots, but also lead to offensive board opportunities.
I know you said that you've been looking for that consistency specifically within the starting lineup. Do you think that you found that and found what really works at this point in time? Because I know it was a little bit more fluid at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I felt like we found something that we got to the SEC play and thought it worked. And obviously we've had illnesses and injuries and such. It's caused us to have to make some changes. So we'll continue to evaluate it. But, I think we'll go with where we're at right now unless something pops up. And, the less changes you make, the easier it is for your players to be comfortable with their role and what they're doing. And players like to know what's about to happen. They want to understand it before it happens. And, I think that takes a lot of stress off of them.
The involvement of Jillian Hollingshed's game, I mean, just it's like watching her mature in real time, game to game. I noticed before the LSU game, she was at the end of the bench during the game. It started with Joy McCorvey, and they were having an intense conversation and pointing things out. Just what sort of, I realize Jillian's responsible for her development, but what kind of role has Joy played in helping Jillian get to where she's going right now?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing to note, Jillian is really good. We've known this from the moment we started recruiting her. She's really, really talented. What she needed was experience. And, if you go back and think about it, she didn't play a full year last year as a freshman because she was injured and she was sick. She couldn't get a lot of games in for a freshman. And so now that she's adding that experience, she's also adding the physicality piece, which I think has been a huge growth in her game. But when you think about what Joy has done with her, it's been a film review. It has been pushing her in practice. We've been a little bit more early on. We floated her around a little bit more position wise, and we settled in on playing her at the four and the five. I think then she really took off, and I think that has been that's been great for her, because we could keep her consistent with her position in practice. And Joy does a terrific job with the skill development. She's very, very detailed with the minute things. And I think that's where Joy has really helped, not just Jillian, but our post players.
Quick follow-up. In various post combinations you have, the Jasmine Franklin and Jillian Hollingshed, is that one you particularly like sometimes? That is two very quick post players.
Yeah, I think it's situational. Those two post players are very aggressive right now on the boards, scoring, they're athletic. They give us a lot of options defensively, so love that combination. Also, when we have Rakia in there, you stretch the defense. When Sarah's in there, you're stretching the defense. And now when Caroline's in there, she can give you an inside and an outside presence with her ability to shoot. So we can flip those combinations. We can change it up depending on our opponent, depending on the way the game is being played. And then also gives you a little bit of depth if you're in foul trouble.
Obviously, playing UConn LSU back-to-back isn't easy. Is there anyone who sticks out to you who's kind of helped keep the team steady through that? Because obviously Thursday was such an important win for you guys. Is there anyone who sticks out with someone who, was consistently good at regrouping the team and keeping them, steady?
Yeah, I think Jordan Walker is that person for us. I think she's the You know, she doesn't get too high or too low. She's very competitive. She's a little bit quiet by nature, but I think in those moments she can lift her team up. She wants to win, and she wants to do whatever she can do to help the team. So I think she's also, because she's respected so much, I think the team looks to her, and she has a very powerful voice on our team.
If you need comic relief, does that go to Jordan Horston?
Comic relief, Horston gets a lot of that. Kaya Wynn wins the day, and Caroline Stripling. The combination of Kaya Wynn and Caroline Stripling, they literally could have their own TV show. They are hilarious and great kids.
Kelly Harper, Lady Vols coach, Tennessee taking on Mississippi State tonight in Starkville.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back to close out hour number two of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with John Wilkerson. So we have seen the Kyrie Irving trade to Dallas. Thought this was interesting. On one sports betting line, the Mavericks went from a 25-1 favorite to win the NBA championship to 14-1. The Nets went from 6.5-1 to win it to 20-1 to win it. And then with sports betting, a different website, the Mavericks went from 33-1 to win it to 10-1, and the Nets went from 8-1 to win it to 22-1. So a significant difference in those two. Thought those two were different. Those that might be a little bit skeptical of Kyrie Irving might have actually given the Nets a better chance to win the NBA title with him departing. But anyway, those odds were significantly changed in Vegas based on the fact that Kyrie Irving is leaving the Nets to go to Dallas.
Yeah, and I do wonder if there is going to be an obvious addition by subtraction for Brooklyn. And there's always the chance that, I mean, there's without doubt, Kyrie Irving is an outstanding player. When he's on his game, he's as good as any guard when it comes to getting to the basket and finishing. I mean, he's got great range. He is a difference maker. He is an impact player. He can be among the very best in the game, but I certainly hope for Dallas's sake that we can find the old Kyrie as opposed to a Kyrie that I think has been distracted by a number of different things.
And what I find interesting is you got Luka Doncic that is used to playing with the ball in his hands the majority of the time. Kyrie Irving is used to playing with the ball in his hands the majority of the time. Who's going to acquiesce?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be real interesting to see how that one plays out because that's been Luka's team.
Mm-hmm. Sure has.
And now Kyrie Irving's coming in, and knowing how Kyrie Irving can let his ego get in the way, I just don't know if that's going to be a happy marriage.
We'll see. That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. The trade deadline, I believe, is Thursday. In terms of the rest of the league, we'll see what other deals happen. Hour number three of Sports Talk is right around the corner. It starts with our friend Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com. He joins us next on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.